You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompos Bolivar, 6 hours south from Cartagena. And this is episode 342 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Thank you to all of those who tuned in to 341 with Alexander Barrett talking about his revolutionary app, iThinker. Check it out so you can see some transparency between coffee cultivator and consumer. That's very cool that you can trace it all the way back and see how much the coffee grower has made himself. Then before that, of course, we had Kyle Johnson talking about the massacres, which are ongoing in Colombia at the moment. So very important to hear that one with Kyle Johnson. Today's very special guest is Adrian Alsema. We have him on only when Colombia is burning, unfortunately. So we're going to talk about some of the current events taking place, the demonstrations that have strafed through Bogota and I think destroyed 46 different streets and however many small police checkpoints. And we'll be talking about that and the importance of the foreign press on reporting the truth of what's going on here in Colombia, because self-censorship amongst national journalists in the mainstream press is at an all-time high. So the foreign press has its duty to report on the reality and has, of course, more leeway in which to move. Thank you again to those of you who have written to just say how grateful they are and how pleased they are with Emily Hart's reporting. Her newscast that comes out weekly in this podcast has been incredibly well received, and for good reason. And then, well, we'll leave you in her capable hands now, and then we'll be back with Adrian Alsema of Columbia Report. So over to Emily Hart and then Adrian Alsema. Thank you again for listening to this episode 342.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of September 14th, 2020. On Tuesday of last week, Bogota police murdered 46-year-old lawyer Javier Ordóñez, who was unarmed. Officers pinned him down and shocked him with a taser for over 2 minutes as he begged them to stop. He was taken to a police station on charges of drinking alcohol in public, where it is reported that he was beaten to death by officers. The incident with tasers was caught on camera and quickly went viral, sparking protests across the country. Police forces responded to demonstrations against police brutality by attacking protesters, shooting live rounds into crowds. Within 48 hours, 13 people were killed and more than 400 were injured. More than 70 civilians were wounded by firearms. Unrest spread and there were riots in 10 cities. After the week of protest and ongoing police violence, Bogota began a reconciliation process. Mayor of Bogota, Claudia Lopez, condemned the behaviour of the police, pledging a thorough investigation and far-reaching reform. Colombia's acting police chief has asked forgiveness for the brutality, as has Defence Minister Carlos Olmez Trujillo. However, Colombian Commission of Jurists, endorsed by the UN, have demanded that Defence Minister is removed from his post. Opposition Senator Iván Cepeda and 12 NGOs announced criminal charges against Trujillo and 5 police generals. Protests continue. The scandal around Empresas Públicas de Medellín, known as EPM, has entered a new chapter. The investigation around Hidroituango, a hydroelectric dam, recommences after its February suspension due to the pandemic. In 2018, chambers of the dam had to be flooded after an infrastructure emergency threatened to break the dam and flood huge areas of the country. The project will begin operating 4 years later than projected, and its costs have risen from 7 billion pesos to more than 16 billion. In mid-August, Attorney General appointed a special agent to handle EPM's claims for 9.9 billion pesos against its builders, designers, auditors, and insurers. This investigation links EPM's leadership, former mayors of Medellin, former governors of Antioquia, and leading members of the board of Hidroituango. This week, Mayor of Medellin, Daniel Quintero, delivered a report that reveals the causes of the 2018 emergency. The report had been concealed by the company's directors and former mayor Federico Gutierrez. The document made it clear that builders of the project had not followed the official designs. EPM is the third largest company in the country. It is responsible for a large number of Colombia's infrastructure projects, and a good deal of the Department of Antioquia's budget comes from their profits. New cases of coronavirus continue to fall in Colombia, and some schools are now reopening, with strict biosecurity measures. International flights will start reopening on the 21st of September, though flights to Cartagena will be open from the 19th. Land and sea borders will open in October, though a state of health emergency will remain in place until the 30th of November. That was this week's newscast. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCoy.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling, episode 342. I'm here in Mompox, and my very special guest is repeat guest on the Colombia Calling podcast, Adrian Alsima, who's the director of Colombia Reports. He's there in Medellin, and we're going to be talking a little bit about what's been going on in Colombia this last week. And I really hasten to add that this is not an isolated event. This is something that's been coming for a long time and simmering beneath the surface, and now people's outrage has hit the streets. And we've got Adrian here to talk to us. I only ever get you on the show, Adrian, when things have gone really, really bad. So welcome back.
Yeah, hi, I'm your crisis specialist.
That's a bit right. I mean, what? So, I mean, let's start from the beginning. I guess it was last Tuesday or so, or Tuesday, that the absolutely tragic and unnecessary killing of a citizen in Bogota, 44 years old, Javier Ordóñez, father of two. A clear-cut example of police brutality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that.
Ironically, on the very day that Colombia was celebrating Human Rights Day on Wednesday.
Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah.
You had like the newspapers talking about Human Rights Day and the president announcing that he would be doing a speech like about human rights, and at the same time the news broke that the police just like the brutality of the murder was like it's just difficult to describe like it's like you there's killing a person and there's like just killing a person like five times at once, you know, like which is what those policemen did. And especially like under this administration, police, and I believe particularly in Bogota, police have been like increasingly abusive. In Medellin, police are actually relatively cool.
Okay.
They're only engaged in kidnapping. But that murder and the general discontent about the Duque administration and its dictatorial tendencies blew things up. Mind you, like people have also been at home, like stuck at home for like 5 months, having to listen to the dribble of that jerk. And then on Wednesday, like it was like the November protests, but mm-hmm. the November protests had a purpose, and were organized, but those concerns were never attended, and on Wednesday, that same discontent like fueled with the rage caused by that homicide, just caused like an uncontrollable outburst. And I noticed, for example, that like on Twitter, like I was trying to tell people like keep it peaceful, like don't go violent, and I had serious trouble telling my community, the Colombians in my community, to keep it peaceful, because they were like, yeah, we did that, and it didn't work, and good luck getting rid of the mafia peacefully. And so it's becoming increasingly difficult to control this general discontent and keep it like democratic and keep it peaceful. And you saw that Duque reacted the same way as before, like with a state terror campaign. Just the police in Bogota just engaging in terrorism, and that can only go wrong.
Yeah.
Right now, too, like there are reports on social media of military police going to Bogota. I don't know how that's gonna pan out or what the idea of that is. But it's clear that like before, Duque was trying to pretend to be a Democrat, and now he doesn't even bother anymore. Like the guy is clearly serving criminal purposes. He is not serving the public. He is violating the Constitution blatantly, and what you saw over the weekend was a spontaneous uniting of democratic forces against Duque and the mafia that got him into office.
So I agree with you 100% on this, and I see that the marches, the violence, it wasn't organized, it was spontaneous. These things, there weren't people
and unhinged.
Yeah.
Because I have like a Facebook community and followers on Twitter, like I have some influence generally. And I noticed on Wednesday that people who generally agree with me just told me to fuck off. I thought that was quite concerning, because like my message is quite consistent, that like the only way we can get anything done is peacefully and democratically. But that's becoming an increasingly hard sell, because like people have run out of resources, I couldn't disapprove more of violence and vandalism, but I can't blame people for being angry. Like if you look at the extreme corruption during the coronavirus crisis, and the amount of bullshit we need to endure by Duca, and the ineptitude and the level of criminality of this government is just like people are just fed up. I can't blame them. I'm also I'm in full defense of democracy mode. But if they kick me out of the country, I don't fucking care. If they want me to live in a democracy, if they want me to live in a dictatorship, or if they believe that I will conform to living in a dictatorship, they got the wrong asshole. I'm not doing it.
Before we get into other things, because it's as you say, and that's so succinctly put. Can you blame people for being angry? And you know, I've been here a while. You've been here a while. And in fact, my wife said the other day, she goes, "I just don't feel." And she grew up in Barranca Bermeja. I mean, get that in the 80s. And she says, I've never felt until now, you know, an equal risk to sort of, let's say, to personal security. And as in the years that I grew up in Barranca Bermeja, I think she said it's worse. I mean, this is the worst it's been since then, which is a huge statement for her, who usually doesn't get involved in these sort of things. And then I thought maybe for my listeners, we could say, you know, this government
apparently believes that committing massacres for political purposes is okay. Like we're clearly not safe anymore. Before, it was clear that the ELN was a threat because of their use of violence and terrorism. But now the government itself has become a threat. For example, to journalists or and even the general population, because they will just resort to terrorism in order to sort of like maintain control or belief that's like a legitimate exercise of authority, which it isn't. That's what dictatorships do. And what I feel, the impression I get from just talking to people is that Colombia is not going to accept a dictatorship, and Duque does not understand that those times are over. Like Uribe is done with. And you saw it on Friday when Claudia Duque basically became the leader of the country.
Claudia López.
Claudia López. Got the support of Gustavo Petro and the Inspector General, it was just very evident that someone ordered the police to commit a massacre. At that point, you're talking about state terrorism. And then you don't have a legitimate government anymore. So Claudia López jumped in to defend the constitution and the very legitimacy of Duque as president. and got all democratic forces behind her and was able to somehow put the genie back into the bottle, which I thought was quite impressive. But I don't think we're done yet with Dooku's attempts to simply not be the president of a republic, but actually like turn it into a half dictatorship, and not even out of ideology. Like obviously the democratic center is far right, but to defend criminal interests. Let's not forget that the ambassador of Uruguay had a cocaine lab on his family estate. That Uribe has had ties to organized crime since the beginning of the Medellin cartel. So clearly you're dealing with a government that's defending criminal interests and is willing to overstep the boundaries of democracy to defend them, and that's extremely serious and dangerous.
Yeah, let's not forget old Carlos Holmes Trujillo, Minister of Defense. His father is definitely involved. And then, of course, allegedly, and she created that website to defend herself, the Vice President Marta Lucia Ramirez, which was just a ridiculous website.
Well, Carlos Holmes Trujillo, he was mayor of Cali when the Cali cartel ran the city hall.
Yeah.
The guy hasn't, when Carlos Holmes Trujillo was interior minister in the late 1990s, he considered the massacres carried out by the paramilitaries, like under the cover of the so-called Combivir, he considered that a legislative issue. The guy has no... I sincerely believe we are dealing with genuine psychopaths. If you think a massacre is a legislative issue, then you're clearly sick in your head. And Duque, with his fucking COVID variety show, he was literally hosting his COVID variety show and going through all the fucking statistics of how many people got better while police were shooting at civilians outside the presidential palace. That's the behavior of psychopaths. That's not normal human behavior.
You've written about this extensively in it. That piece that you wrote, which details whilst President Duque is speaking, and you've got each timeline. He's speaking, saying this while they're, the police are shooting here, and he's speaking, saying this at the same time. But the importance of what you're doing obviously highlights the importance of what a foreign press here in the country has to do. And that's, again, throw some light on the situation that is currently taking place in Colombia. So how do you feel that we should be doing this? The correspondents for Reuters, for AP, for The Guardian, for The New York Times, etc., freelancers, loads of us freelancers. What is our role right now?
Well, our role is to tell the world what is happening in Colombia. With all the plurality that exists. Like my style of reporting is obviously different than AP. But this plurality is important. Like AP actually did some one. Like AP is kicking ass at the moment. They're putting out some really good stuff, and all are just showing the world what's happening in Colombia and preventing that, let's say, the lights go out, which is what happened in Venezuela. You hardly hear anything anymore about Venezuela because they basically ejected all the foreign correspondents. So Venezuela is clearly a dictatorship with a humanitarian crisis that's almost indescribable, that you don't hear about because there's no foreign correspondents to tell you about it. And you notice that the Duque administration is doing exactly the same. Like foreign journalists have been refused access to the country. You notice that we are being intimidated, systematically, and they are just kind of like one by one trying to kick us out of the country, and when that happens at that point, like the world doesn't see what goes on in Colombia. And that's when they have the liberty to do whatever the fuck they please. And that's that must be prevented.
Well, I'm concerned.
This is why like a foreign press in any country is important. But in Colombia the situation is critical. Like they're not letting journalists in. They sent a journalist back from to Mexico from the border, from the airport. The migration, the visa regulations are becoming increasingly impossible to comply with, which is drastically reducing the capacity of people to report. So me, I can work 70 hours a week. But if I work more than that, I'll literally kill myself. And if you look at journalism 20 years ago, there were approximately 50 journalists, correspondents on staff working here. Right now, you have, still a few dozen, but a lot of them are just kids that have not been here long enough to understand the historical context of things, which makes the reporting very superficial. And if you look at, for example, the number of journalists who have been here, who were here when Uribe was still president, so before 2010, I think you can count them on one, maybe two hands. And the rest, this is a general problem in journalism. I would say a crisis in journalism. Is that a lot of the younger generation of journalists are just trying to get by, just trying to make a, like desperately trying to make a buck. And that results in like really superficial journalism.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, we can't. It's the desire, I think, is there for long form and well explained articles and reports. But you know, if the media outlets don't want to take them and don't feel that their audiences will be able to, let's say, digest them, and that's the one of the main problems these days, isn't it? It's like everything is, it has to be clickbait and everything has to keep someone's attention more than 15 seconds or less than 15 seconds.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like it's quite easy to sell a story in which you say that Venezuela is is becoming a dictatorship, which it already has. Because like in the Western world, so like in Europe and especially in America, that fits within our idea of the world where the West is free and the East and socialism is dictatorship. So selling a story that a socialist regime is installing a dictatorship is very easily digestible for us Westerners and especially Americans. However, if you try to sell a story that what is essentially a capitalist system is becoming a dictatorship, then suddenly you notice that people don't want to hear that because it goes against their preconceptions their own cultural bias as a news consumer. So at that point, for example, when I say like, well, this capitalist society is turning into a dictatorship, you get a sort of an automatic response that I'm a communist, you know, rather than like, no, I'm a Democrat. I defend democracy. That's my duty. And then you get a sort of that's also a thing that like, In America, you notice that Trump is trying to revive this sort of binary idea of politics, of left and right, completely ignoring the dimension of libertarian versus authoritarian or corrupt versus honest. Like politics is multidimensional. It cannot be defined by left and right. And those who do often do so because either they have authoritarian tendencies or they have criminal interests.
Which brings us to where we are here. Definitely, the criminal interests. And I mean, you mentioned Fernando San Clemente having the laboratories on his farm and family farm. We also mentioned other members of the government. So, I mean, we've got two more years and this government is unwilling and I would say unaware. You might hit that back at me, but I'd say this government is unwilling to change, unwilling to make any changes, and unwilling to kind of placate a very a furious population. So where do we go from here?
Well, where we go from here is that I believe as those defending democracy must remain united. Because like the far right, exactly like the far left, You noticed, for example, like when the FARC demobilized and disarmed and took part in politics, their influence was reduced in zero. Like they had, like, they now have like 5 seats in Congress of the, like in the Senate, there's like they have 5 seats out of 106, which makes them decorative, you know, like they're like, and when they were still in arms, like their power was a lot bigger. So you notice that the extreme left has kind of like been marginalized the way that they should be, because people like within any country, like the vast majority of people will always like be moderate. Like they'll be moderately leftist, they'll be moderately right wing, they'll be moderately progressive or moderately conservative. And the extremists are generally a fringe group. In Colombia, the far right is currently in control, but if you look at their effective base, you're talking about a fringe group, like if Uribe holds like some sort of protest, like free Uribe protest, even here in Medellin, they weren't able to mobilize more than a few thousand people. I mean, like my birthday attracts more people. You know, they think they're super big, but they're really on their way to becoming marginalized, exactly like the FARC, which is a good thing. And I believe that both the extreme left and the extreme right deserve a place in politics and in Congress, because naturally, like by keeping them there, like they generally just occupy a few seats in Congress and do their shouting, but the moderate majority ultimately decides what's going on. And now you notice that like Ivan Duque is trying to promote the far right agenda in a way that he just oversteps the boundary of what is his mandate. And is violating the constitution by doing so, and popularly called that's dictatorial behavior.
Do we see a way out of this? I can only imagine that there will be more demonstrations, and as demonstrations tend to be here, especially in Colombia, they do end up, you know, there's a violent element somewhere. I mean, they've been violent this last week, but for various reasons, but I think there was something organized for the 21st of September, if I'm not mistaken, but between now and then there'll be more demonstrations, surely,
and there will be more attempts to criminalize legitimate opposition. There will be attempts to criminalize the media. There will be attempts to criminalize the protesters, because I think Duque and Uribe and his band of narco-fascists realized that the party is over, and that Colombia has moved on, Well, what's worrying is that they are willing to use like extreme violence to serve their interests. And the Colombian people are just not going to take it.
And this extreme
so
violence.
So like there's, for example, like potentially like Duque could try to install a dictatorship, but the Colombian people are simply not going to accept it. And they will overrun him. So I hope he doesn't try. Because like the last thing we need is a revolution. I'm not aware of a revolution that didn't end up in a total mess. Well, maybe the American Revolution.
This extreme violence of which you're speaking, you know, as we sort of wind this down, there's too much to say, but you have openly stated, not only in your editorials, but on social media, that you promised your mother that, you know, she'd die before you did. How real do you feel the threats against your person right now?
I don't know, and that's the problem. I don't feel there's a direct threat. But I need guarantees, because like as a journalist, you need to feel free to write. You know, like if you know that you're going to get fired if you write such and such thing, then you're not going to write it. And I'm completely independent and thus free to write whatever I want. However, the level of fear at the moment and also the level of insecurity, for example, with the abuses of power when it comes to visas, that creates an insecurity that you don't feel that you're in effect not free to do your job because like you're too afraid to say something, or you're like, oh, I don't want to endanger my visa. Or the combination of both just paralyzes you, which happens to me at times, like where where I'm simply paralyzed. This is what needs to be overcome. And that's going to be a tough fight.
Well, you know, we've got to be very careful.
But I'm a tough guy.
You're a tough guy. You've been here long enough. You've ruffled enough feathers. You've certainly had your fair share of threats.
Nobody can accuse me of being a pussy.
This is true. I mean, they call you all sorts of things, but that's not one of them. Usually it's activist journalism. But your voice is important, and I don't know how much. I'm sure the website is visited by thousands.
Not just my voice, the guarantees are important because the guarantees allow a plurality of voices. So they give me the freedom to do reporting as I see fit. They give the Associated Press the freedom to report as they see fit, and they give the freedom to anyone to report as they see fit, and those guarantees currently do not exist and are a grave threat to the freedom of expression. But because if you think that people don't censor themselves because they're afraid, then you're wrong. People censor themselves all the time because they are afraid. It's why Colombian media are almost completely silent about the reality in the country, because the journalists working at the newspapers know that they will get fired. They know that their boss does not pay any legal costs if they are being sued for libel or slander, which in Colombia is a criminal charge. And journalists are extremely vulnerable, and the damage done on Colombian journalism is tremendous. And foreign journalists still have like some freedom to report on the reality, which then ends up in Colombian newspapers. But that is under serious threat at the moment.
Well, that's it. When you see, you know, local journalism, let's say we got a news report of 45 minutes, 15 minutes of that is sport, 15 minutes of that is, you know, farandula or social media, and then 10 minutes of that is sort of something else quite trivial, and 5 minutes might be news at the end of it. And it's news, you know, sort of car crashes and children drowning in pools, tragedies, but not the national news.
If you look at media like El Tiempo, the country's largest newspaper, that's basically become largely a propaganda vehicle. Weekly Semana, which is now trying to be like the Colombian Fox News, has become a vehicle to just report on stuff that doesn't exist. Fortunately, and this is like a hopeful thing, is that because of the internet and because of social media, there's been a steady rise of independent news websites. So you like the scandal that erupted over the conspiracy to commit fraud in the 2018 elections, that came from La Nueva Prensa, which is an independent news website. And there's a number of those websites that have been growing in popularity and are effectively the only ones who report on stuff that has, for example, legal consequences, because it actually deals with election fraud and other relevant, well, quite significant issues. Because the corporate media are no longer reporting on what's happening in the country. They've been completely silenced, and their journalists, like I know they mean well, they mean just as well as I do, but they don't have the freedom that I do, and that's horrible, because it's incredibly demotivating when you're a journalist and you know that your duty is to tell the truth and to report on the reality of your country, but you're not allowed to by your boss, or you're afraid that you'll get killed or that you'll get sued and you don't have the money for a lawyer. This is incredibly damaging. And recently, like you mentioned, Marta Lucia Ramirez, whose husband is now in trouble over a business deal with a long-time narco, like she went beyond just harassing local journalists and actually filed criminal charges against Jeremy McDermott, the boss of think tank Inside Crime and the former BBC reporter. So you see that they are overstepping all kinds of, like, they're ignoring all kinds of limits they used to, like, respect and no longer respect. So now we, foreign journalists, like, we're being profiled, we're being investigated, like, we're suffering the same intimidation as Colombian journalists, and this is something that's entirely new to me.
Yeah, it's Well, as I say, we unfortunately we just don't have enough time to go through all of the issues that need to be addressed here. But I thank you for coming to me and saying that you wanted to talk about these things on this week's episode. Obviously, as always, you come on when Colombia is burning. And there are, one day we'll get you on to talk about something incredibly trivial if it ever happens here. And, everyone out there, if you want to support independent journalism, you should check out the website patreon.com and look up Columbia Reports, because Adrian's newspaper, our online paper there, website, Columbia Reports is there, and you can pledge from as little as, I think, $2 a month and help sustain economically. But I'm sure he'd want you to pledge more than that, but help sustain economically the website so he can continue to report on what is largely left unreported from his standpoint there in Medellin. So, Adrian, thank you so much for your time again here on Columbia Calling. Please stay safe.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. So we've been talking to the director of Columbia Reports, Adrian Alsamer, who's there in Medellin. This has been episode 342. Do check out the Patreon page for Columbia Reports and do throw some money at it if you can. As always, everyone, stay safe, stay well, and if you're going out to demonstrate, please, please, please be careful. Bye-bye. Yeah.